Thank you very much, Mr. Salzagarad. This basically concludes our main presentation of tonight's program, or in this side of the globe, in this morning's program. We were supposed to have two discussants, Ramin Safizadeh and Mehdi Askari. Unfortunately, Mr. Safizadeh has some technical problem and is not able to join this discussion, as I have been noted. So we will have only Mr. Askaria. Dr. Askaria is an expert in nuclear technology, and he's joining us from the same room that Mr. Sazagara was. So he is going to be using the same login name, actually, with the Sazagara's name, but this is going to be Dr. Mehdi Askaria, who's joining us from London. Mr. Askaria, please.
On the basis that I can be heard clearly, I would like to thank EJI for arranging this international PAL talk debate, and I would also like to thank the three previous speakers who actually have presented on a wide variety of issues related to the present dilemma that Iran is facing with respect to its nuclear energy aspiration. I'd just like to point out the one pertinent point that Professor Sik pointed out, in the sense that there is a new strategic reality in the region, which is all well realized, and also the pertinent point being that the USA is now a Middle East power, and at the same time it is a neighbor of Iran. Looking back to the late 18th century and throughout the 19th century, I think it's worth making a point that Iran, it's used to having neighbors which don't have a sort of natural border with it. It brings to mind the great powers at the time, that of Great Britain, who was actually constituted a main neighbor of Iran throughout the 19th century. Therefore, that is not new to Iran, but also the realization that that scenario has now been somehow modified with the presence of the USA in the Persian Gulf, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Central Asia, which virtually surrounds Iran completely as its one unitary neighbor. Another point that Professor Sik made, and I would like him later on to respond to perhaps, is that of the overtures made at the time of President Clinton's administration, the overture in the shape of a regret by the State Department, Mrs. Albright, regretting the interference of the United States in the internal affairs of Iran in 1953. That expression of regret was followed virtually by the next day but one by imposition of new sanctions on Iran, and it actually perhaps sent wrong message to Iran, at the same time an expression of regret, and on the next day imposition of sanctions. And I was just wondering that the lack of response from Iran could have actually had something to do with that perhaps a dual action by the United States. One other point that Professor Sik made was regard to the involvement of Iran to whatever degree in the Afghanistan affair, and the support to the Karzai government. I was at a recent meeting which this issue was raised, and there were strong feelings from the Iranian side that going back to the famous quote on goodwill begets goodwill, that Iran received nothing in support, in exchange rather, of its goodwill in relation to the support of Karzai government and also the support of the allied forces in Afghanistan. And what it actually did beget was its inclusion in the axis of evil soon after that kind of the support which it actually had lent to the allies, and in particular to the United States. All that, putting things perhaps in perspective and throwing one or two questions just for clarification to Professor Sieg. But one point coming out of Professor Sieg's presentation was that it appears that the United States is at the moment not prepared to accept for the Iranian nation, government representing the Iranian nation, to actually acquire the useful use of the peaceful use of nuclear energy. That goes against, as Farideh put very lucidly, against all international treaties. And it does actually go beyond the treaties signed by Iran and the NPT treaties, and which actually safeguards the use of peaceful use of nuclear energy. It puts Iran in a position now that, having agreed to the additional protocol of Saadabad, which I'm sure you're aware and heard a quite extensive description of that from Farideh, and that essentially agreement, whether it was about the total process of the enrichment or the actual enrichment within the centrifuge itself, is a technical point, but the point which perhaps wasn't made quite lucidly, and I would like to draw that to the attention of the listeners, is that that agreement was made on a voluntary basis. The suspension of the process of enrichment was made on a voluntary basis. What actually happened earlier in the month, on the 18th of September, it has become a requirement on Iran to suspend its activities on enrichment. Now, the requirement is a requisite now for Iran not to be, for the Iran's case not to be forwarded to the Security Council by the 18th of or 28th of November. This is a significant departure from the Saadabad Agreement, and also from perhaps the text of the NPT agreements that Iran has signed, and there are so many other signatories. It appears that the United States and the three European powers, who actually had prepared the text of that resolution, had given extensive assurances to other countries under the NPT that this particular agreement will not apply to them, and it is only made a special case for Iran. Now, taking this point as given, this brings Iran into a very unique situation, a situation of a rogue state, a situation of a prior state, a situation of the state which cannot be negotiated with, which cannot be trusted, and it will put Iran in an impossible position to agree with this situation. As we just said earlier, there are realities. There are realities in the region. There are strategic realities. One of the realities that I believe the Iranian nation, Iranian people, and Iranian politicians do realize that they need to present a transparent case and also to engage in confidence-building measures. But those confidence-building measures, as you said earlier, is got to be reciprocated, is got to be two-sided. Otherwise, it will lead Iran into a more into a tighter, closer corner, and it will find it very difficult internally to somehow bring about or sell the idea of accepting essentially a unilateral acceptance of the resolution's demand without anything obtained in reciprocation. If the three European powers and the United States are after resolution of this situation with Iran, they should get engaged in negotiations that what are the requirements of Iran for its nuclear energy, what are the plans for Iran on the development of its nuclear energy power, and how that can actually be satisfied in a way that will give the necessary confidence building measures, guarantees that it will not venture into a military situation or a military for the military use. Putting Iran, just trying to conclude very briefly, putting Iran in a situation that it will be singled out as a country, as a rogue country, as a private state that cannot even be allowed to exercise its rightful rights under the international agreements, will lead us into a dead alley. And that's for those people or powers who want to resolve this situation should be at the forefront of their tactical approach to this present dilemma. I stop for now. Thank you.